Hello, I'm Michael Steed from Kaplan Financial, and today, St. George's Day, oh, and incidentally Shakespeare's birthday, I'll be looking at yesterday's events in what has been described as the most important budget since 1945. I'll be taking a look at the macroeconomic background, which in many ways has dominated the news, and then we'll descend into some detail, looking at some of the more important tax aspects of the Chancellor's speech, and in particular looking at items that affect AAT members. Now, the budget has always provided a sense of occasion in Westminster, even though the wearing of top hats and buttonholes has long gone. Punters bet on the length of the Chancellor's speech, and even on the colour of his tie. And headlines afterwards are always amusing. I particularly liked Alistair in Wonderland and Till Debt Us Do Part. I have to say that Alistair Darling looked uncomfortable. Many commentators said he looked as though he didn't really believe his own forecasts, and not being a great orator, he was, as Ronnie Barker would have it, having trouble with his worms. So let's start with the big numbers. Yesterday's macroeconomic news was truly dreadful. As David Cameron said in his return speech, all Labour governments eventually run out of money, and Alistair Darling has done that in spades. We've got the sharpest downturn and the deepest recession since the Second World War. Not only that, we've got a new kid on the block, deflation. Remember, that's negative inflation. So the prices are actually going backwards. Now, as economists will tell you, that's not a bad thing in the short term, but it is bad in the longer term because dropping prices mean jobs on the line. Yes, it is a global recession, but the UK looks to be in a dreadful position to deal with it. We've had toxic debt, we've had the rescue of Northern Rock, we've had short selling of bank stocks, and the bank bailouts themselves. Public borrowing is set to hit an eye-watering, I love that phrase, all the commentators use it, so I thought I would too, an eye-watering £175 billion in 2009 alone. That's 12% of GDP. Remember, GDP is, in effect, our worth that we turn out in the country in a year. It's our income, if you like. And in very round numbers, the GDP of the UK is about £1.43 trillion. If it's £175 billion in this year, he is forecasting £173 billion in the year afterwards, and the list goes on. These are truly huge sums. They affect all of us. And of course it begs the question, can the government deal with a repayment? If there is doubt, there could be a run on the pound. But if public borrowing is set to hit £175 billion in 2009 alone, let's take a look at an even more frightening number. It's the total national debt, that is all the government borrowing from all years, and that is due to rise from 50% of GDP to nearly 80% of GDP. Remember, GDP around about £1.43 trillion. And that number is going to beat all records ever. So, in macro terms, there's no possibility of balanced budgets anytime soon. And most commentators are saying that the debt will simply pass on to the next generation. But remember that Treasury predictions are subject to constant changes. November's PBR figures are long since torn up. Even the Chancellor has admitted that the UK economy has shrunk by 1.6% in the fourth quarter of 2008, and he estimates a further shrinkage of 1.6% in the first quarter alone of 2009. His estimate for the total contraction in 2009 is 3.6%. The last recession, remember, the total contraction was just over 2%. So this is going to be twice as deep and twice as nasty. The Treasury, however, predicts that the UK economy will grow again in 2010. Who believes that? Certainly not any of the commentators, certainly not the external experts like the IMF. And I don't know about you, but I've never yet seen a Treasury forecast that turned out to be accurate. Okay, that's the background. Let's move over a little bit to the detail. And as you'd expect, that's where the devil is. There are lots of budget notices, and they're all available on the HMRC website. This time there are 93 in total. And being the true professional, I've loaded them all onto my flash drive, so I've got them at all times. And very interesting, they are too. A major theme in yesterday's budget was, and here it goes, tax the rich. The argument is that they got us into the trouble in the first place, now's time for them to pay and pull the rest of us out. And remember too, that's popular with backbenchers. So let's start with personal allowances. We had some announcements on this in the pre-budget report back in November of 2008, but those rules have been overwritten as at yesterday. The fine detail is going to be in the Finance Bill of 2009, but effectively the message is this. The personal allowance is to be, and I quote here, gradually reduced to nil for individuals with, and here's a new kid on the block, adjusted net income over £100,000. I read the budget notice a couple of times and it still didn't quite make sense to me, so I am waiting for the detail in the finance bill. But in round numbers, I think that means that anyone with £100,000 plus of income is going to fairly quickly and swiftly lose their personal allowance. If you recall in the pre-budget report, the idea was that there were two breakpoints, one at £100,000 with a reduction, but never more than one half of the existing personal allowance, and then £140,000 where it was going to disappear pretty swiftly. That's been replaced. So a single limit of £100,000 and a fairly rapid decline in your PA after that. Okay, those on high incomes, six-figure salaries, are in the news even more. Alistair yesterday announced a new top rate of tax on taxable income above £150,000. That's taxable income, remember. That's income after you've added everything up and taken off a personal allowance. You'll recall too that in the November 2008 PBR, that was pegged at 45%, and that was going to come in 2011. So yesterday's announcement is that there will be a 50 rather than a 45% rate, and that's coming in April 2010. That's a year earlier than previously announced. And if you're looking for the details on that, in case you have some high net worth individuals that you're acting for, you might want to go and have a look at budget notice number one. Now, if we've got a new taxable income high rate of 50% on incomes over £150,000, we need to amend the dividend taxation as well. And no surprises there. There's going to be a new higher rate of tax on dividends to match the new 50% rate. And that has been set at 42.5%. So that means that from April 2010, there will be three rates of dividend taxation in the UK. There's going to be 10% for basic rate taxpayers, and that will certainly affect most people in the UK. Remember, you're taxed at 10, but that is set off by a pretend straight from the planet Mars tax credit of the same 10%, which means that basic rate taxpayers don't pay any tax on their dividends, no effective tax, that is, and that's not going to change. For what I'm now going to call normal higher rate taxpayers, 32.5%, exactly as it was, and no change. But the new rate for higher rate taxpayers with taxable income above £150,000, that's going to be 42.5% on the gross. And that will still be eligible, of course, for the 10% credit. Okay, one other bit of news on the high net worths, and that is that the higher rate tax relief on pension contributions is to be abolished from April 2011. Remember, at the moment, people with taxable income that is in the higher rate bracket, if they make contributions into their pension, they get to tax deduction at source, and then they make up the extra through a claim on their tax return. But that's going from April 2011, but not notice for all higher rate taxpayers, only those again with taxable income over £150,000. Now, that's a little bit of a way off, isn't it? April 2011. And not surprisingly, the Chancellor yesterday also announced some anti-force stalling measures, which in straightforward language means that if people try and wop stuff into their pension in an unnatural way before April 2011, then he's going to raise his rather amazing eyebrows. And the details of that can be seen in Budget Notice 47. There was one thing on the personal tax front that made me raise my eyebrows very slightly, and that was in respect of personal allowances for non-residents. So, who does get a personal allowance? It's a question we've asked before, both in these podcasts and on the Tax Update series. It's a seemingly innocent question, and it's not a very obvious reply. But the list, as you may recall, includes Commonwealth citizens. But somehow that phrase seems to have offended the Human Rights Act, and I did raise my eyebrows when I saw that it was to be removed in order to get it right with the Human Rights Act. But it does seem to be that most of those affected will still be able to get some relief, perhaps by reason of the double tax treaties. So if anybody has got non-residents, you may just want to have a quick look at that. The details are in Budget Notice 54. But what about savers? The drop in the interest rate to an historic low of 0.5% has been bad news generally for the thrifty savers, especially pensioners. But there is some good news on the ISA front. The Chancellor yesterday announced that ISAs for the 50-plus are going to have a new limit, and that's coming in for the 50-plus in 2009. And the limit is to be raised to 10,200, of which 5,100 can be in a cash ISA. The remainder, remember, can be in stocks and shares, either with the same or another provider. And in 2010, the ISA limit, the 10,200 new limit, will be available to everybody else. So, 2009, ISAs for the 50-plus go up, 2010, everybody else's limit also rises. Details of that, if you want to know that, in BN 51. So if those are the savers, what about the pensioners? Well, as you'd expect, there are some small proposals in the budget about winter fuel allowances. And interestingly, a new one here, recognition of family breakdown and mothers who have to work, grandparents of working age who care for their grandchildren will have that time credited as though it will work for the purposes of their state pension. I now want to have a look at employees. Yesterday's budget had some announcements in respect of company car taxation. Remember, the background here is that employees who receive company cars are going to have a cash equivalent, a benefit in kind charge, if you like, that is based upon the CO2 emissions of the car. The greener the car, the lower the tax charge. Something that I will be looking at on the Tax Update series is the taxation of expensive cars. We've got some new rules from April 2009. Now, these were pre-announced, and they were not dealt with in yesterday's budget. But what was dealt with in yesterday's budget was changes to company car taxation from 2011-12. Couple of things happening then. The Chancellor has set the rate of tax on cars from 2011-12 onwards, and, incidentally, and another bashing of the rich, he is abolishing from April 2011 the £80,000 cap that's used to determine the cash equivalent. So rich people with big expensive cars are going to be paying more tax where they are provided through businesses. The new low CO2 emission level is therefore as follows. 2009-10, that's the current tax year, the lowest limit is 135 grams per kilometre run. The year after that, 2010-11, it's going to be 130 grams per kilometre. And the year after that, 2011-12, and this is new, 125 grams per kilometre run. There's some other tidying up around the edges too. The reductions given to hybrids and cars using special fuels will be abolished, and the rather complicated calculation for electric cars is to be abolished completely. So the detail of that is in BN 64. Let's now have a look at some business tax members, and this is going to be of interest to AAT members. In the pre-budget report, Alistair Darling recognised that a lot of businesses will be incurring losses, both unincorporated businesses and incorporated businesses. And very broadly, and only very broadly, they are both dealt with under the tax legislation in the same way. Let's look at an unincorporated business. There has been for some years now a one-year carryback on losses. So if you're a sole trader and you've incurred a loss, you can either set it off against other income in that year or the year before. Now, in the pre-budget report of November 2008, Alistair Darling announced that that one-year carryback would be extended to 3 years, hopefully triggering tax repayments, which would help businesses with cash flow. It's always been true that new startup businesses can carry back trading losses in early years of new trade to their pre-business income. That goes 3 years back, and that is not new. But what is new is that the one-year carryback in the pre-budget report was extended to 3 years. It was, however, limited. The first-year carryback is unlimited, but the second and third are limited to £50,000. So you don't get an unlimited carryback and therefore lots of yummy tax repayments. Remember too, for unincorporated businesses, you can still carry forward losses against profits of the same trade, and there's no change there. Remind yourself too that in the pre-budget report, for incorporated businesses, it was pretty much the same thing. You could carry back 3 years instead of 1 year, and that was for the year that started on the 24th of November and went to the 23rd of November 2009. Now, here's really the headline. The headline is this, that for both incorporated and unincorporated business, this three-year carryback has been extended to one extra year. If you are an incorporated business, that is now extended to all losses incurred in corporation tax accounting periods up to November 2010. And if you're an unincorporated business, it applies to trading losses incurred in the 2008-09 tax year and this is new, the 2009-10 tax year as well. In both cases, remember, carryback unlimited for the first year and then restricted to £50,000 in the next 2 years. I'd like to turn now and have a look at capital allowances. The background, which I'll recap on the tax update series, is that we have a new capital allowances world from April 2008. Capital expenditure for tax purposes is in effect in three boxes. There's the 20% pool, that's for ordinary plant and machinery. That's where you get a writing down allowance of 20% per annum on a reducing balance basis. We've also got the 10% special rate pool, that was new for 2008, and includes the old long-life assets and the new kid on the block, integral fixtures. And the third box, 100% capital allowance on, effectively, environmentally nice capex, such as low-emission cars, that's very low-emission cars, and energy-saving technology. You'll also recall that from April 2008, we're getting used to the annual investment allowances that's available for businesses of all sizes, and that's a £50,000 per annum write-off as to 100% for expenditure on, again, what I'm billing as normal plant and machinery. In simple terms, that's vans, lathes, etc., but not cars. So, what's new? Yesterday, Alistair Darling announced a temporary doubling of the writing down allowance on the general pool. That's from 20% to 40%, but it's only for 1 year, from April 2009 to April 2010. So if you're an incorporated business, that will cover capex incurred between the 1st of April 2009 and the 31st of March 2010. And if you're an unincorporated business, that's from the 6th of April 2009 to the 5th of April 2010. So both incorporated and unincorporated businesses are going to benefit from that, and that's got to be of interest to AAT members. Remember, you must have a qualifying trade. That means something like lathing, material working, etc., etc. Anything other than investment businesses and property businesses. And one final point on this, it's important to remind yourself that this doubling is on top of the £50,000 annual investment allowance. So you can write the first £50,000 off, and then if you've still got some capex to cover, if it falls within the normal 20% pool, you can have 40% on that just for this 1 year. Okay, I'd now like to turn to the mighty VAT. First, as ever, registration and deregistration. Yesterday, Alistair announced that the registration limit would be raised from £67,000 to £68,000. That's a fairly modest increase, but we've come to expect that every year. That's from the 1st of May 2009. And of course, if the registration limit has gone up, the deregistration limit has also gone up, and now that's £2,000 under the 68, that's of course going to be £66,000. And the details of that can be had in Budget Notice 70. In the pre-budget report last year, there was quite a hoo-ha about the standard rate of VAT. You'll recall that Alistair decided to drop the standard rate from 17.5% to 15%. And yesterday he confirmed that it would go back to 17.5% at the stroke of the high midnight on the 31st of December 2009. Now, not surprisingly, businesses are going to be thinking about ways to get around that, whether they can pre-bill and so on and so forth. And as you'd expect, there are some anti-forestalling, that's anti-planning provisions, in place for that. And if anybody needs the detail of that, please go and have a look. It's in Budget Notice 71. Again, on the VAT roundup, some new fuel scale charges from the 1st of May. That's pretty much an annual event and no changes there. This affects all taxpayers who run business cars, whether it's their own or employees, and who provide fuel at or below cost, or indeed free. The scale charge is a proxy for the taxation of the private use, and it's determined by the CO2 emissions. Remember, and it's an anomaly in the legislation, it only applies to cars. It doesn't apply to vans or motorcycles. One of the big areas, and has always caused trouble in VAT, is the mighty option to tax. The option to tax, remember, is where somebody who has property elects to change its exempt nature and instead to tax it at the standard rate. And remind yourself, please, there's only one reason in the entire universe for doing that. It's so that you can recover input tax. Remember, the golden rule in VAT is what goes out determines what comes in. If you make an exempt supply out, you cannot in principle have your input tax back. If you make taxable supplies, and it doesn't matter what rate, you will in principle be allowed to have your input tax back. Now, the option to tax has undergone some changes in 2008, but the changes announced yesterday was one further twist, actually, I think, fairly beneficial. It's all about what are known as permission options. It's where you have a building from which you've already made exempt supplies and you now wish to change those into taxable supplies. And the principle of a permission option is that you have to go and ask HMRC for permission to opt in order that the two parties can agree recovery of any previously incurred input tax. Sometimes these permissions are automatic, and you can get that from the public notice. It's 742A. But what's new is that because of the change in the EC law, it was decided that there was no vires, that means power, for the current UK law, and so some of the automatic permissions have changed, and you will need to go and see the new 742A public notice to get the details on that. As we come to the end of the VAT roundup, I'd like to quickly touch on some new rules for cross-border services that were announced yesterday. There's a current cross-border system for services that starts with a rule that says you charge VAT in the country of the supplier. Now, there are some overrides to this basic rule. For example, land services, such as conveyancing and architect services, are charged where the land is. And something that will probably be familiar to many AAT members in practice is that if you have services such as accountancy, which are going across borders, then again, the reverse charge operates. That is, that VAT is brought to account in the member state where the customer lives. As an alternative to that, of course, if your customer is right outside the EC completely, then you simply don't worry about the VAT at all. The budget announcements yesterday cover new supply rules that arise from a change in the EC legislation, and these are due to start in January 2010, and they will gradually affect the UK supply rules in respect of cross-border services. We're going to have more reverse charging and an electronic refund service for overseas VAT. And that will affect AAT members who, for example, go overseas on business, say to France, and they incur French VAT. The question is, how do I reclaim that? Currently, it's a paper-based system, but that is going to be transmogrified into an electronic form. Let's move on now and have a very quick look at stamp duty land tax, because this will affect anybody who buys property up to £175,000 in value. You'll recall that last September, in order to help the housing market, Alistair announced that there would be a stamp duty land tax holiday, and that would be from September 2008 to September 2009. And in effect, he raised the zero rate band for stamp duty land tax from its original value of £125,000 to the new temporary high of £175,000. But yesterday in the budget, he announced that that holiday was to be extended now to the 31st of December 2009. So good news for house purchasers who are buying up to £175,000. The details of that, incidentally, are in budget notice number 45. Now, to finish this podcast, let me just turn swiftly to another couple of issues. Let's remind ourselves that the Chancellor has put aside about £1 billion to tackle climate change. These numbers seem telephone numbers to most ordinary mortals like me. But interestingly, a lot of new wind farms turning up in the Thames Estuary and off my beloved Kent, it's going to be a brave new world indeed, if we can afford it. I was rather amused in the budget by the car scrappage scheme. Trade in your old car, providing it's at least 10 years old, and get £2,000 cash for it. Bangers and mash? I think it's bangers for cash. But let me tell you, there's no way that Alistair's going to get his hands on my Land Rover. And speaking of cash, and as I finish here, if we dine out at all, I think it's going to be at the Credit Crunch Cafe. Cheerio.